Welcome to The Chacho Show, the podcast about the human side of startups. We're joined today by my friend Aaron Falter. Aaron is the founder of Pink Skies, a boutique performance consultancy that focuses on brands and health, mindfulness, and culture. In addition to Pink Skies, Aaron leads growth for Mother Games alongside her sister, where they are building their first MMO title and are on a mission to create transformative experience through gameplay. She has a newsletter, Work Work, which we'll talk a lot about today, where she enjoys distilling the inner work and outer work she's learning as she goes. We cover a range of topics in our conversation, from religion to growing up in a family of female entrepreneurs, branding, developing our values, how our inner work is connected to our outer work, regulating emotion, and the relationship we have with our thoughts. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Aaron over the past year and have always loved our conversations. I'm really excited to be sharing this one with you today. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
You got a great podcast, Mike. Thanks for doing that for me.
Thank you. It was truly just for this.
I know. Right? No, she's teasing. But okay, I want to start off. So I actually recently spoke at Notre Dame, your alma mater.
Yes.
And I learned about something while I was there, something called Touchdown Jesus.
Yes.
Can you tell me about Touchdown Jesus?
I might be putting Notre Dame to shame by not having the full story behind it, but it's this massive mural that's on the front of the library, a library that I worked in a lot. And it's truly huge. It's the entire face of the building, and it's an image of Jesus with his arms up in the touchdown sign.
Yeah, and it's like right behind the goalpost almost when
yes,
I saw it.
You see it. You see it from the stadium 100%. It's a very strong focal point.
That's cool. And you worked at the library? What was your what did you do there?
Oh, I didn't like work at the library. Oh, okay. I actually worked at the Entrepreneurship Center.
Oh, nice.
And as well as our Universal Pictures, I was like a campus rep for them, but I did a lot of studying there. That's what I meant by work.
Got it.
Yeah.
I would love to start with you and your childhood. Could you describe your childhood for me?
Yeah, I would say it was very active and full of exploration. I lived right next door to my best friend, and I feel like it allowed me to, we just did everything together. And we were so creative. When I think about my childhood, I think about a secret hangout spot that we, like it was like our secret, the spot behind a shed in our backyard. And we would have secret meetings there. We would always bike to our gas station, our local gas station, and get milk duds and onion rings, like really shitty food.
Yeah.
And we would make up dances to Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears and stuff, usually in an effort to convince our parents we could have another sleepover. But yeah, I grew up in a really lovely childhood. And we moved to Florida when I was in like middle school. And that is really what gave me a new perspective on culture, I think. Previously, I was based outside of Chicago.
Okay, I didn't know you were from Chicago. Maybe I did, but
I probably didn't talk about it a ton. So, I like rep Florida hard these days.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I rep the Midwest hard, so we got both areas of the country covered. I grew up not too far in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. I don't know if you heard of it.
Yeah,
it's a great spot.
Side note, what were you speaking at for Notre Dame?
Oh, so I was talking to the Esteem graduate program, which is like an entrepreneurship program. Yep. So they brought us out to speak and talked about investing and what we look at when we invest in startups and that kind of stuff. So it was a great time. That was my first time there.
Cool. Yeah. I know that program well because I worked at the Entrepreneurship Center, as I mentioned, and I helped run our business plan competition, and there was a lot of Esteem students there.
Nice. I didn't realize until I got there that Notre Dame is a Catholic college.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It has a chapel in every building on campus.
Right. I grew up going to private school. And so when I got there, I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of felt a little bit at home.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, school, I see, you know, scripture on the walls or Jesus all over the place. hence Touchdown Jesus. And I know one of the things that you and I bonded over was growing up in a religious home. Mm-hmm. And so how has religion impacted your life now as an adult, either positively or negatively?
I think that positively speaking, it definitely brought a pretty consistent awareness that there's a greater creator behind this life on earth. And whatever you believe, I do think that there is a higher power. And I think that idea was infused into my childhood pretty early on. And I think that that's a really beautiful, positive thing that's come from it. But I also think that on the flip side, being surrounded by Catholicism specifically, it was also like challenging at times. I think that the language that Catholicism specifically uses is really hard to relate to and digest. And it's very, like, the word I would use is maybe like academic. And I think it's really like, it can be very rule and fear-based than other religions, I feel, at least. So in a way, I think that pushed me to find teachings that I could relate to a little bit more. But I still pray. And more recently, I think I felt more open to exploring a little bit more on my own terms.
Yeah, I'm in this similar boat. So I grew up also in a religious home. I went to Catholic school and then went to an evangelical Christian school. Mm-hmm. And once I got out of college and stuff, I stopped going to church. And I actually didn't even really want to believe in God. I just was over it. But there was just always something, call it God, the universe, or whatever it might be. There would always be these sort of synchronicities that would happen where it's like, okay, there's something greater going on here.
Definitely. I think that's what I kind of, and most people probably would say it's more spirituality than religion, or at least in my household, it's considered that. And so I think that, I don't know, if you're practicing, I think a lot of religions at the root of them are focused on very similar things. And we like to kind of create these barriers about the specificities of each one and try to say that they're so different than each other and create boundaries. But at the end of the day, I think if you're focusing on those true foundational good things about religion, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, it is. I agree. And I've come to a similar conclusion. And you grew up with a family of female entrepreneurs. So your mom was an entrepreneur, if I remember.
Yes.
Okay. What impact
did... My mom and my sister.
Your mom and sister are sweet. So
what
impact did that have on you growing up, having female entrepreneurs in the family?
I'm really proud of that, actually. From a young age, I feel like I really saw what it looked like to be a female founder and what it looks like to build a business and, you know, not just the incredible moments, but also the challenges. I've seen both my mom, you know, my mom and I was at younger ages, but both my mom and my sister go through all the ups and downs that come with forming a business. My mom started an online phone card selling business during the dot-com boom, pre-Skype and international phone calling. And she had her office in our basement. And so I grew up stuffing brochures and doing homework out of the office and everything. And then my sister started a tech company and actually went through Techstars. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. And that was really incredible to see. But there were moments where I was like, whoa, she is a robot right now. There is nothing else going on in her mind other than this business. And it's hard to be around her. So yeah, I've seen a lot. It's been a really cool journey. It's taught me that there's nothing that a woman can't do, especially in the realm of building something. And it's also given me a little bit of that, like, probably not to gender stereotype, but I think that this is often more connected to men, where you have this idea that you need to provide and you have to be the source of providing. And I think that I have a lot of that in myself. And I think a lot of that comes from the entrepreneurship side of me.
How has your appreciation for your mom in particular changed now that you're a founder entrepreneur as well?
I have a huge appreciation for her doing that while being a mom. I think she was doing what she really needed to do, whether that was financially or creatively. I think that there's that element of entrepreneurship too, where you feel called to really create something. And I'm really happy that I got to see that, because sometimes you don't grow up seeing that in your family members. And I think it taught me a lot about the value of your time and your hard work and money. And I'm grateful for that experience in growing up. And then now that I'm doing things like this, I think she, since she knows the challenges and the struggles of what it is like to go through, sometimes she errs on the side of being like, maybe do something that's not as intense, you know, it's sure. not that important kind of thing. But she's super supportive of everything I do and really proud of the different things that I've done throughout my career.
Yeah. And your sister was also an entrepreneur growing up. Mm-hmm. Did she task you to do any sort of random stuff for her?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like in high school, I was known as Kelsey Falter's sister. And she was doing entrepreneurial things from then on. She started a nonprofit organization. She was the president of school, that stuff. And so I was always pushed to do things by her in a way that I think set me up really well to be in the startup environment. She was not the type of older sister that taught me how to do things. If I asked questions, it was always like, I don't know, figure it out. I did. So from a really young age, it was immediately just figure it out and make it happen. And so I think that's a lot of startup environment. You really need to exercise that.
Right. Is she the oldest?
Yeah.
And how far are you? Okay. And how much older is she than you?
2 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So very similar in age. Yeah. So I'm the oldest as well. And my brothers will ask me, like my brother asked me, how do I write a cover letter? I'm like, dude, just Google it. Yeah. I can't tell you off the top of my head.
So, or use ChatGPT.
Right, exactly. And that's how I introduced him to ChatGPT. He's like, holy shit, this is amazing. My siblings come to me a lot for, hey, how do I do this type of stuff? Mm-hmm. So I might need to adopt some of your sister's practices and use a little bit of tough love.
Oh, yeah. Now I don't ask her how to do anything. It's like off limits right. in my mind.
Yeah, you don't need to. Right?
I don't know if she views that way, but it's how I view it.
Right. And you're working on a company together that's a little bit in stealth. What's it been like working with your sister now as adults?
It's interesting. I said to her as soon as she started to, it was clear she was starting to noodle on some ideas. I was like, hey, listen, next time you enter back into the world, I'm going to be a part of it. And through conversations, I think she started to be like, oh, wow, Erin really has over the last 10 years or so really gained a lot of experience. And I think she also trusts me in a lot of ways. She's pulled me into so many different projects and things throughout time. And I think a lot of that's built in that trust of doing some things together in school. But at first it was really interesting. I wasn't expecting this, but it was a bit more of a mirror than I anticipated. It was like, oh, whoa, our brains are firing in very similar directions right now. When we'd be in meetings at first, I was like, I know kind of what she's thinking and where she's going with this and how she's engaging with this material. And wow, is this what I'm like when people are working with me? Oh, do I like this or do I not like this? And so I think that was really interesting. And I wasn't expecting that because it's been a minute since we've been really integrated on projects. Now I think it's just a matter of we speak our minds pretty intensely. So we have to remember that when we're around people. But so far it's been really good and I'm really happy about it.
Wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about naming companies, one of the things I've admired about your work is the uniqueness in your naming. You have Pink Skies and then you have Work. And I actually didn't want to name this podcast the Chacho Show because I'm like, that's so boring. And it's like, I'm also not very,
a great name.
Thank you. Yeah. I credit my mom for that. I just didn't want to be another tech bro with a podcast named after himself, you know? Mm-hmm. But either way, what steps did you take to come up with both Pink Skies and Work?
So Pink Skies, they're both kind of made up differently. Pink Skies I started consulting during the pandemic and I wanted to create a legitimate consulting business out of it. And I really didn't want to, similarly to you, I didn't want to have my name be the name of the consultancy, mostly because I felt like I didn't want to attach so much of my identity to work. And that was the biggest thing behind it, less so any sort of, I guess it's still ego-driven, feeling like I'm more than my work, but you know, I do think that that's the case. And so I knew I didn't want to have it be my name. And then it came out through a brainstorm session with my partner. Ultimately, the purpose and the reason behind Pink Skies is emanating a feeling. I felt like I work with a lot of founders and entrepreneurs that are building something. And they're really early stage, like a couple of them pre-launch. And as we were talking about before, there's so many ups and downs and also just nonstop things just adding to the to-do list. And especially on the marketing side, it feels kind of like, oh my gosh, where do we even prioritize all of these things? And it just adds up. And so I wanted the founders to feel like the breath of fresh air that you feel after having a day where it's extremely productive and you see your vision coming to life. And I feel like that feeling happens after you step outside, you have a breath of fresh air, and it's on a day where there's a beautiful sunset, and you feel like when you see a pink sky, it's different than just the normal sky. So you can see it and then for a moment really zoom out and understand where you're at in life. And I think that it's a feeling that be reminiscent of being like, oh, wow, everything I'm doing is worth it and it's happening. And that feels really good.
It like stops you in your tracks too. You're like, oh, shit, this sky's beautiful tonight.
Yeah, it really pauses. It stops everything a little bit, like you said. And then work is something that came after years, actually, of pondering. And so I knew I wanted to create something related to inner work and outer work, and I wasn't sure what it looked like, but I really loved the name Work.
So good.
It's been there since like 2018.
Wow. We'll talk a little bit about Work in a bit, but I'm a sucker for good brand names. I was really curious about that. And one of the things too is I love how your personality comes through in your branding, and even like looking at the website, you have like extra, extra. And in my mind, I can hear the rest of the phrase, you know?
Yeah.
But we live in a world where there's a lot of like LinkedIn speak, if you will, like it's kind of boring and dull. And so if you're advising me as a founder, how would you advise me to bring my brand to life and not use as much like buzzwords and acronyms?
Yeah. I think maybe, are you talking about more through the lens of the personal brand side of things?
Yeah. Yeah, like I think so. Yeah, like personal brand, but Pink Skies itself is a consultancy. And like you mentioned, you wanted to separate the identity of your name and whatnot, and even just infusing more personality into brand in general. But let's say with the personal brand side of things.
Yeah. I think that one, I think people consume more than they create, and that does impact a lot of ways that you think you should create. If you're consuming a lot of what other people are shouting about on LinkedIn, I think that you often can lose your own perspective on what you want to talk about. It's happened to me many times before, and I think it's why I'm quieter on LinkedIn and Twitter. It's because every time I go on there, I'm like, oh my gosh, everyone's talking about all these things. They're shouting to the rooftops, all the stuff that they're doing, and I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. So that said, I do think that building a presence on those platforms can really have true impacts for your business, especially on the hiring side. Oh my gosh, if you have a following on those platforms, it's so much easier to find good talent. But anyways, I digress. Yeah, it's really important to take a step back and ask yourself, what are the things that you care about talking about? What are the things that you care about portraying? And let that be the source of your content creation as opposed to all of the other noise out there. Because I think, you know, everyone talks about authenticity being something that gets more attention and exposure on platforms these days. And, you know, how can you be authentic if you don't really know what authentically resonates with you? So I think that's the biggest thing I would suggest. But there's plenty of things that I do as workarounds as well. Like, for example, I don't press publish on Workwork. I write everything like 100% through and through. I do all the things. I create all the assets, all of that stuff. Although I did have a friend help me with the branding of Workwork. But I can't press publish. I have my virtual assistant do it for me. So you got to find workarounds if you're scared of posting as well.
Sure. What's the fear there when pressing publish?
I overthink it too much. I worry too much. I don't know. It's truly psychological. And I'm like, okay, if that's the barrier, I must remove it. And I will remove it by having someone else do it for me.
Well, I'm glad someone presses publish for you because what you write is really good. You seem to be someone who really is careful about what you let into your world. I remember reaching out to you on Twitter at first after reading Workwork. And you mentioned that you don't really spend a lot of time on Twitter, so you're just seeing the message or something. And that really struck me. And so how do you protect your mind, if you will, from social media in general?
I definitely have moments where I fall to the doom scroll. But for the most part, I kind of check in with myself, especially on platforms that I'm uncertain about, and determine if it's really added value and made me feel good, or if it's taken something away and I'm feeling insecure or in a comparison cycle. And when I recognize that, it's pretty clear to me that I need to not spend my time there. There's not really time for that type of stuff anyways. And if I know that that's a source of those things, then I just need to cut it out.
Yeah. It's something that I'm trying to get better at because it is easy to be like, to go on Twitter or LinkedIn and be like, oh, wow, like everyone's doing all this stuff and doing all this learning and reading and what have you. And I'm like, I do a lot of the same stuff too, but I don't talk about it as much. And so it feels like it's not as good enough in a weird way. One of the things that I appreciated about the Pink Skies site and just in general was the Pink Skies values. How did you develop those values for yourself and Pink Skies?
I was going through an exercise of hiring someone part-time to help on the operational side, more of a project manager type. And I felt like it was really important to have someone working with me that had similar values. And so the impetus for it was for a job description. But the way that I came up with them was really connected to the list of my own personal values that I've created over time with my coach. So that was the sort of the foundation of where these came from. And then I really applied it to how I think about actually the work that I do every day. It was also really timely because it was during a time where the reason why I needed help was there was so much going on. And I recognized that as soon as I started to just try to like execute for my clients and just put out more deliverables. And I wasn't rooted in why I'm doing any of this work. I realized I actually became a way worse consultant to work with. Like, I wasn't in a good mood. People didn't want to talk to me. And I was just like, why is this happening? And as soon as I really formulated these, I was returning to them pretty frequently and feeling like, wow, okay, this rooting myself in these really do allow me to approach the day in a way that makes sense. I'm prioritizing the things that are important and I'm showing up in a way that I feel good about. So that's kind of how they were formulated. But ultimately, all of the values can really be summed up to the first one, which is our business's growth. And the reason is because growth is not only in the business sense, but the personal sense as well.
Yeah, growth is a big reason too why I started this podcast. I know ambitious people, entrepreneurs, investors, and whatnot, they're all about business growth, but I know they're about personal growth too. And similar with the work, like inner work and outer work, how are those things connected? And I really appreciate your one value, which is we're not afraid to hold opposite ends of the spectrum in the same palm. Data plus gut feel, creative plus performance, heart plus mind. And that really reminded me of what you write about on Work. And we met thanks to Grace Clark. She had recommended Work on Twitter, speaking of Twitter. And I remember seeing it and feeling like I found someone who shares a lot of the similar values as I do. And I binge read most of the newsletter in an afternoon. And now it's the newsletter I recommend the most to people. Yeah, I really appreciate you having the courage to write about the stuff you write about, because it's really needed, in my opinion. And I have so many questions about work, but can you talk to me a little bit about the origins? You mentioned how you were thinking about this for several years. And so what was that process like for you?
Yeah, I think that, one, appreciate all of the kind words. When you describe it as courageous, I don't take that compliment lightly, because I think that it is courageous. One of the things I say is doing inner work is courageous. Only courageous people do that. And I think it's because it's really scary to look within ourselves and ask ourselves questions that sometimes the answer isn't always what we want to hear. And it requires work. Like, it requires actual dedicated time and attention to improving yourself in order to act on the things that you discover. And so for me, it was really around, how do I make sense of the things that I'm learning and digesting as I'm going through this process myself? And how can I connect that back to the ambitious part of me out in the world trying to achieve big things? Because to me, at first, they felt so separate. And it was only through actually going through the process of creating work that I realized that they are actually imperative to one another, that you can't actually even do inner work unless you are out in the world doing things, receiving feedback that allows you to then continue to question and refine and understand yourself. And so to me, it all started to make a lot more sense. But at the end of the day, it was truly a way for me to make sense of what I'm learning and digesting. And sometimes I think when you're learning concepts, light bulbs go off, but then they might fade away and you might move on with your life. And I really wanted these things that I was learning to stick. I wanted them to be a roadmap for how I can live and how I could maybe even teach important things to my future children someday. So that's kind of why I actually started writing it.
I love that. I know that there's a common sort of trope in writing that good writing is a result of clear thinking. And I'm curious how a lot of the stuff, especially on the inner work side, can seem ambiguous or it can be philosophical. And so how do you bring that down to earth for yourself?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm always great at distilling it for other people, But I think for myself, it really does come through studying and journaling and trying to truly apply the things that I'm learning into my everyday life. And I think that the first challenge is being able to identify moments where an inner work teaching or something that you've learned can be applicable. And I think that you can only start to identify that with time and practice and returning to things frequently. So it's not always easy, but I think that throughout time, through practice, I've become much better at it. And I think that's just a byproduct of continuing to try to distill these things in a way that I understand.
Right. Yeah. What is your writing process for work work?
I've tried to do things like, I don't know if you are familiar with Ryan Holiday, but he has a very specific writing method with like note cards and the whole system, right? But I've tried to do that. But for me, the best way that it works is I sort of study something, whether it's through reading a book or truly just taking a moment to understand what's going on in something that's happening in my life. And throughout time, and that's part of why work work's not a weekly or daily newsletter. It takes time for me to really grasp a lot of these concepts. So I'll usually jot down ideas as they come. And so I'll start to put down some thoughts. Maybe it's something that I read in a book or a scenario that's happened. And then throughout time, I'll start to pull in things that relate to that from other books or scenarios, kind of like a magnet. And then once I feel like I have enough notes, I sit down and I write in one sitting.
In one sitting. So you're just like from start to finish.
From start to finish, I'll read it maybe the next day and make some edits. But yeah.
And do you have anyone else like read it over for you?
My VA reads it for grammar, but that's it. I honestly wish that I had someone that I trusted to read it more from a conceptual standpoint. But I think that maybe someday I'll get to that point where I feel like I have a right-hand man with that.
Sure. Right. Whenever I do writing, my right-hand person, if you will, is my wife. And she's always like, she's very blunt and very direct with her feedback. And she used to be a fourth grade school teacher. And so she's quite good at writing. And it definitely helps, especially with some of the conceptual stuff. One of the things that strikes me about work work in general, as well as the photography, it seems like you're very deliberate with the cover image that you choose for each newsletter. And so what's the process there for you when coming up with the actual artwork?
Yeah, I love photography. It was a pastime of mine, especially street photography, like really human moments that you can't really plan for. So I think that that was a natural process for me. I am always saving things from Instagram, or I don't know if you've heard of Arena, but yeah, I use all different things and save images over time. And so when I am done with a piece, I'll go to my saved images in various places and see if there's one that jumps out. But I'm very visual and I really love the medium of photography. So I think that has been a really fun process, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that part of it is kind of easy to overlook, but it makes the newsletter in general stand out, in my opinion.
Thank you.
And of course, each section is divided into sort of this inner work and outer work section, although you started blending the two a little bit over time. And so we talked about this a little bit before we pressed record of like, there's this almost like yin and yang of both of these worlds where it's like working on yourself, the inner work, and then these worldly ambitions. And so how do you reconcile between those two things? I mean, that's the whole point of the newsletter, really. But I thought it was curious that you started blending those over time.
Yeah, I'm still playing with that, to be honest. I think that the goal was always, like, before I even started, you know, I talked about how sometimes the idea of working on yourself and looking within is conflicting with this outer ambitious person. And I always kind of was toying with that conflicting part of it. But at the end of the day, the blending of them is really what I wanted. I wanted it to actually be all one for them to truly be combined. And so as I was continuing to write, there were times where outer work was really clear to me, but I never wanted it to be like another marketing newsletter. Like that section, I always, like in the beginning, you'll notice I am a little bit more like, this is my investment strategy.
sure.
And towards the end, it becomes a little bit more like leadership thoughts or how to think about communication or leading a team. And ultimately, I wasn't sure if those sections were as interesting or compelling. And I didn't know if I felt as interested and compelled to write them, because I think the part of inner work is that it has greater implications and impact on your outer work, on the things that you're doing on a regular basis, on being a leader, building a company. And that in and of itself is maybe the point of it. So yeah, I haven't fully figured out if I'm going to continue to blend them or maybe go back to separation. I think I'll keep flipping between the two.
Yeah, I think there's definitely times where maybe it's a little bit more separate or blended, like you said. I wanted to bring out a few sort of, what do you call each, like, I know it's a newsletter, but what do you, each publication, is it?
Yeah, or an edition. I don't know. It's, I've toyed with that too, and I'm like, whatever.
Sure, right. I just want to make sure I'm using the correct terms for you. So each edition, and I want to start with the first one, but really thinking about, okay, if you're a founder and you were to start with going through the archive, mm-hmm. where is a good place to start? And in my experience as an investor working with founders, there's a few that stood out to me. And really starting with the first one, you talked about emotional regulation and coming from a place where some of the start was because you noticed that you had difficulty regulating your emotions. And so mm-hmm. what are some tools or practices that you've learned since you started WorkWork that are helpful for you when it comes to regulating emotion?
Yeah, honestly, it's a big reason why I started doing any form of inner work to begin with, was because I recognized that I could be very reactive at times. What I mean by that is there's a very clear difference when you're reacting to something and responding to something. And I think that in, as a, you know, thinking through the lens of being a founder, you're in high stress situations. There's a lot of things happening all at once. And you have moments where your emotions are very intense, and that can cause you to react in situations and then afterwards probably not feel great about it. At least that's how I felt when I would be reactive and not really be in touch with what I was doing, how I was responding to something. I think that is, it's incredibly important, especially if you are wanting to feel good about the way that you show up. So the first step is really just feeling the emotion itself in your body. I think your body has very physiological reactions to emotions, especially negative ones, positive ones too, but they're, it's probably less obvious and you're probably not able to be as aware of it. So you might notice a pain in your chest or your body heat up or your stomach feel something. And I think that that can be really helpful in recognizing, like, something's happening here. What is this? What is this feeling? What's this emotion? Why is it happening? Do I need to step away from things for a moment in order to collect myself and then return back? And that's something that had such an impact early on, was recognizing a moment where I need to say, okay, I need to remove myself right now and work through it with myself before I can come back to the conversation and do it in a way that is productive.
Emotional regulation is a big reason why I started pursuing a lot of inner work as well. other mental health stuff too, but I think it's evolved to that place and really wanting to be present and to respond well. And it takes a lot of work. And I think there's a lot of sort of unconscious ways that we react that we don't even realize, whether it's at work or with our partners. And I've been married for going on 7 years now. And over time, that stuff just ends up coming out. And so it's really important to work on that for the longevity of the relationship and for having a good, happy relationship too.
Totally. Yeah, it's had a huge impact on my relationship with my partner as well.
Yeah. So there's a few here around the, I think it, you did a series on, is it Byron Katie's The Work?
Yeah, or, Byron Katie.
Yeah, she's awesome. And you did the four-part series on her work. And there's two things that come to mind. One are our thoughts and our attachment to our thoughts. And then these four questions that you can ask yourself relating to thoughts. What's your viewpoint in general on like thoughts coming and going, passing through our minds like clouds in the sky, and then giving meaning to thoughts and choosing what we can do with them? I'm like paraphrasing what you wrote in the thing. So, but yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about attachment to thoughts, and then we'll jump into the four questions.
Yeah. So we have thoughts all the time. Like you said, they pass through our minds like clouds. We have thousands and thousands of thoughts a day. It's extremely human and it's really natural to attach to them. It's really how we make sense of the world. But when they become beliefs or stories, like that's when they have the power to truly become our reality, not just be a thought that passes through our mind. And that gives thoughts so much power into how we view everything. And sometimes those thoughts that we're attaching to and that we're believing in our mind can cause us a lot of pain and or stress or sadness or insecurity. So many different emotions can come from attaching to thoughts that ultimately aren't true. And I think the reality is that, especially as it relates to other people, there's far too much data all around us that we can't possibly know or can't possibly see to know what's happening with other people. So attaching to thoughts about an assumption or an idea or something that you think is happening with somebody else, it's truly impossible to actually know that that's true. And then there's also usually a much more useful thought than the painful one that you have in your mind. Something that's probably actually more true and also a lot less painful and a lot more productive for you to connect with. Because at the end of the day, our thoughts do kind of structure how we view things. So it's important to have a sense of the world in a lot of ways, but make sure it's a better one, a better, a more truthful, a more useful one.
Yeah, thoughts can, I'm like always in my head all the time. And so it's something that I've had to work really hard on is like, first of all, trying to stay in the present moment. So that way my mind doesn't just continue to run and make up these stories and make things worse than they actually are and have more anxiety. And you've written about these four questions by Byron Katie, and my wife tipped me off to these a few years ago. And I think they're really powerful. So I'll read them and then maybe you can tell me about like the impact that they've had on your life. So first question is it true? This is relating to thoughts. So is the thought true? Second, can you absolutely be sure that it's true? Third, how do you react when you believe that thought? And then fourth, who would you be without the thought? And it's such a powerful framing, but how have you used this in your life in general?
Yeah. Well, one, I also want to add that there's the turnaround, which I think is actually the most important part of this exercise outside of truly grasping whether or not something is true. But talk about work, like the inner work is like real work. I think that's why she calls it the work. So many right. works here. But it really is. It's a lot of work. You have a thought and you put it up against these questions. And unless you're thorough with answering the questions, you probably won't receive the gift of looking at the perspective in a whole new way. And I think that's the biggest thing I would say about Byron Katie's questions is if you're not willing or interested in seeing things through a different lens, then don't do it because, you know, you're not going to get much out of it. It's only those that are really interested in seeing things through a new lens because they recognize that the thought they're having is causing, you know, something negative occur in their life. So I've used it various times and it's truly like had completely different impacts on the situation. I look at it in a whole new way and feel a lot better. But now right. after I've done that many times, I think I kind of jump to two different places. One, it's like immediately asking myself, is it true? Just the first question and really knowing mm-hmm. in my head, okay, no, this isn't actually true. And sometimes that's enough. Other times you might really feel like you need to connect with a different idea in order to be able to move on from the thought. And so that's where I kind of cycle through in my mind the turnaround where I'm truly focused on, okay, what are the different ways that I could think about this and find a truer thought by flipping the thought around? And
oh, sure.
that is also extremely impactful.
I have to imagine that's really helpful too when it comes to sort of limiting beliefs and flipping those around as well. It seems like that's a good practice for using this framework.
Totally. I think it's incredible for limiting beliefs. I think it's really incredible for work environments. You know how many people get in their head about what's happening with the company or with their boss or with their coworker, and they make these stories in their minds about what's going on or what should be happening. And it creates really challenging communication cycles. And if you just start to recognize like, oh man, this actually isn't true. And I have no way of knowing that this is true. And I might be better off thinking about it this way.
Totally. Yeah. I've used the framework at work before. So I'm glad you brought that up.
That's great.
I want to touch on one more publication here, number 32, which is There's a Time for Everything. And as ambitious people, we often feel like there's not enough time to do everything we want to do. We mentioned earlier in the conversation, when you're starting a company or a founder, there's just an endless to-do list. And you've recently worked through this yourself. And so can you tell me about how you've worked through this idea that there's a time for everything?
Yeah, I think that honestly, I returned to it a lot more recently. Also, I was just thinking about how I was saying earlier in this conversation that we don't have time for these platforms that create negative emotions. In that way, I do think that there's who wants to spend their time like that, I guess, is a better way of phrasing it. But yeah, I think that we, especially ambitious people, it's really, you're racing against the clock. It always feels like that. Speed, speed, yeah. speed. And I think when you ground yourself in the idea that there's time for everything, the way that it happens for me is it really expands my thinking. It broadens it outside of the minutia of whatever it is that you're currently focused on. You realize you have a moment where it's like immediately, what's most important here? Because this is probably not life or death. Not saying that it needs to always be brought back to that foundational idea, but I think it's really important to return to that at times and really use it as a way of prioritizing and also as a way of recognizing that everything's happening. It's all moving forward. It's all continuing all at once, whether you like it or not, it's all going. And so, yeah it's just, you have to be like, okay, everything that I want to do, I can do. It's going to be fine. I'm just going to continue to move and stressing about if there's enough time to do it really is just speeding up the biological clock.
Oh, yeah. And in a way, you're flipping the script. And going back to these four questions, it's like you're saying going from there isn't enough time, I'm so busy, to there is enough time and I can fit this in, or maybe it's not as much of a priority as I thought it was. I wanted to end the conversation around, let's say Chacho and Aaron have talked people into pursuing inner work, and hopefully we have, but what's a good place for, if you were talking to a friend, what's a good place for someone to start when it comes to inner work?
Mm-hmm. One, I love that idea of us convincing a bunch of people to start doing inner work.
Yeah, me too.
I think if you like to read books, that's how my inner work journey started. And if you're open to meditation, I really love the app Open. And if you need support from someone, I think that a mindset coach is a great place to start. But I'd really, as like a last route of convincing, I'd just say that it's all information that you can use to better your actual work, your actual ambitions. And because of inner work, I'm a far better leader than I was before.
Yeah, that's very similar to the way I started inner work. Books, podcasts,
what was your newsletter?
The book was, there's a few actually. So, and it kind of snowballed. So there was Grit by Angela Duckworth, A Mindset by Carol Dweck, and then Brené Brown. What's one book? Daring Greatly, I believe.
Brené's great.
That, I think Brené Brown was really the first sort of teacher around this. And it was really around vulnerability, but that really what piqued my curiosity. And been working on it ever since.
Love that. But, for me, it was Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth.
Okay. I haven't read him yet, but I've been meaning to. So yeah, I'll have to check out the book. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I really do appreciate your time. I know you don't do these often. And so I hope it was a treat for you. And I hope that, you know, in a year or two, we'll come back and revisit some of these topics and maybe learn about some new ones.
Yes, Chacho, thank you so much. Truly honored to be here. And it was incredibly enjoyable. I always love our conversations.
Me too. Thanks, Aaron.